She strode out into the passageway and opened the door. "Yes?" she demanded. The dwarfs backed away at the sight of her. There was a lot of whispering and elbowing and muttered comments in the nature of, "No, you," and "I asked last time." Finally, a dwarf was pushed forward. It might have been the original dwarf. It was hard to tell with dwarfs. He said, boots? "What for?" said Granny. The dwarf scratched his head. "Damned if I know," he said. "We were just wondering about it ourselves, matter of fact. We were just coming off shift in the coal mine half an hour ago. We saw the farmhouse land on the witch, and, well, you just knew you had to run up and steal her boots," said Granny. The dwarf's face widened into a relieved grin. "That's right," he said, "and sing the ding-dong song. Only she was supposed to be squashed. No offence meant," he added quickly. "It's the willow reinforcement," said a voice behind Granny. "Worth its weight in blood." Granny stared for a while and then smiled. "I think you lads ought to come inside," she said. "I've got some questions to ask you." The dwarfs looked very uncertain. Said the spokesdwarf. "Nervous of going into a house with witches in it?" said Granny Weatherwax. The spokesdwarf nodded and then went red. Magrat and Nanny Ogg exchanged glances behind Granny's back. Something had definitely gone wrong somewhere. In the mountains, dwarfs certainly weren't afraid of witches. The problem was to stop them digging up your floor. "You've been down from the mountains for some time, I expect," said Granny. "Very promising seam of coal down here," mumbled the spokesdwarf, twiddling his hat. "Bet it's a long time since you've had proper dwarf bread, then," said Granny. The spokesdwarf's eyes misted over. "Baked from the finest stone-ground grit, just like Mother used to jump up and down on it," Granny went on. A sort of collective sigh went up from the dwarfs. "You just can't get it down here," said the spokesdwarf to the ground. "It's the water, or something. It falls to bits after hardly any years at all." "They puts flour in it," said someone behind him sourly. "It's worse than that. The baker over in Genua puts dried fruit in it," said another dwarf. "Well now," said Granny, rubbing her hands together, "I may be able to help you here. Could be I've got some dwarf bread to spare." "Nah, not proper dwarf bread," said the spokesdwarf moodily. "Proper dwarf bread's got to be dropped in rivers and dried out and sat on and left and looked at every day and put away again. You just can't get it down here." "This could be," said Granny Weatherwax, "your lucky day." "To be frank," said Nanny Ogg, "I think the cat pissed on some of it." The spokesdwarf looked up, his eyes aglow. "Hot damn!" Dear Jason et everybody, what a life! All kinds of thing going on, what with talking wolves and women asleep in castles. I shall have a story or two to tell you when I gets back, and no mistake. Also, don't talk to me about farmhouses. Which reminds me, please send someone to Mr. Vernissage over in Slice and present Mrs. Ogg's compliments and what a good hat he makes. He can say, as approved by Nanny Ogg. It stops 100% of all known farmhouses. Also, if you write to people saying how good their stuff is, sometimes you get free stuff. There could be a new hat in this for me, so see to it." Lilith stepped out from her room of mirrors. Shadowy images of herself trailed after her, fading. Witches ought to be squashed when a farmhouse lands on them. Lilith knew that. All squashed, except for their boots sticking out. Sometimes, she despaired, people just didn't seem to be able to play their parts properly. She wondered whether there was such a thing as the opposite of a fairy godmother. Most things had their opposite, after all. If so, she wouldn't be a bad fairy godmother, because that's just a good fairy godmother seen from a different point of view. The opposite would be someone who was poisoned to stories, and, thought Lilith, quite the most evil creature in the world. Well, here in Genua was one story no one could stop. It had momentum, this one. Try to stop it, and it'd absorb you, make you part of its plot. She didn't have to do a thing. The story would do it for her, and she had the comfort of knowing that she couldn't lose. After all, she was the good one. She strolled along the battlements and down the stairs to her own room, where the two sisters were waiting. They were good at waiting. They could sit for hours without blinking. The Duke refused even to be in the same room as them. Their heads turned as she came in. She'd never given them voices. It wasn't necessary. It was enough that they were beautiful and could be made to understand. "Now you must go to the house," she said. "And this is very important. Listen to me. Some people will be coming to see Ella tomorrow. You must let them do so. Do you understand?" They were watching her lips. They watched anything that moved. "We shall need them for the story. It won't work properly unless they try to stop it. And afterwards, perhaps I will give you voices. You'd like that, wouldn't you?" They looked at one another, and then at her, and then at the cage in the corner of the room. Lilith smiled and reached in and took out two white mice. "The youngest witch might be just your type," she said. "I shall have to see what I can do with her. And now, open." The broomsticks drifted through the afternoon air. For once the witches weren't arguing. The dwarfs had been a taste of home. It would have done anyone's heart good to see the way they just sat and stared at the dwarf bread, as if consuming it with their eyes, which was the best way to consume dwarf bread. Whatever it was that had driven them to seek ruby-coloured boots seemed to wear off under its down-to-earth influence. As Granny said, you could look a long way before you found anything realer than dwarf bread. Then she'd gone off alone to talk to the head dwarf. She wouldn't tell the others what he'd told her, and they didn't feel bold enough to ask. Now she flew a little ahead of them. Occasionally she'd mutter something like, "Godmothers," or "practicing." But even Magrat, who hadn't had as much experience, could feel Genua now, as a barometer feels the air pressure. In Genua, stories came to life. In Genua, someone set out to make dreams come true. Remember some of your dreams? Genua nestled on the delta of the Vjerks River, which was the source of its wealth. And Genua was wealthy. Genua had once controlled the river mouth and taxed its traffic in a way that couldn't be called piracy, because it was done by the city government. And therefore, sound economics, and perfectly all right. And the swamps and lakes back in the delta provided the crawling, swimming, and flying ingredients of a cuisine that would have been world famous if, as has already been indicated, people travelled very much. Genua was rich, lazy, and unthreatened, and had once spent quite a lot of time involved in that special kind of civil politics that comes naturally to some city-states. For example, once it had been able to afford the largest branch of the Assassin's Guild outside Ankh Morpork, and its members were so busy that you sometimes had to wait for months. Whereas in Ankh Morpork, business was often so slow that some of the more go-ahead guild members put adverts in shop windows offering deals like stab 2, poison 1 free. But the assassins had all left years ago. Some things sicken even jackals. The city came as a shock. From a distance, it looked like a complicated white crystal growing out of the greens and browns of the swamp. Closer to, it resolved into, firstly, an outer ring of smaller buildings, then an inner ring of large, impressive white houses, and finally, at the very centre, a palace. It was tall and pretty, and multi-turreted, like a toy castle, or some kind of confectionery extravaganza. Every slim tower looked designed to hold a captive princess. Magrat shivered, but then she thought of the wand. The godmother had responsibilities. "Reminds me of another one of them Black Alice stories," said Granny Weatherwax. "I remember when she locked up that girl with the long pigtails in a tower just like one of them. Rumpelstiltskin or someone."
"But she got out," said Magrat.
"Yes, it does you good to let your hair down," said Nanny.
"Eh, rural myths," said Granny.
They drew nearer to the city walls. Then Magrat said,
"There's guards on the gate. Are we going to fly over?"
Granny stared at the highest tower through narrowed eyes.
"No," she said. "We'll land and walk in, so as not to worry people."
"There's a nice flat green bit just behind those trees," said Magrat.
Granny walked up and down experimentally. Her boots squeaked and gurgled in watery accusation.
"Look, I said I'm sorry," said Magrat. "It just looked so flat."
"Water generally does," said Nanny, sitting on a tree stump and wringing out her dress.
"'But even you couldn't tell it was water,' said Magrat. "'It looks so grassy with all that weed and stuff floating on it.'
"'Seems to me the land and the water round here can't decide who is which,' said Nanny. She looked around at the miasmic landscape. Trees grew out of the swamp. They had a jagged foreign look and seemed to be rotting as they grew. Where the water was visible, it was black like ink. Occasionally a few bubbles would eructate to the surface like the ghosts of beans on bath night. And somewhere over in the distance was the river, if it was possible to be that sure in this land of thick water and ground that wobbled when you set foot on it. She blinked.
"'That's odd,' she said.
"'What?' said Granny.
"'Thought I saw something running,' muttered Nanny. "'Over there, between the trees.'
"'Must be a duck, then, in this place.'
"'It was bigger than a duck,' said Nanny. "'Funny thing is, it looked a bit like a little house.'
"'Oh, yes, running along with smoke coming out the chimney, I expect,' said Granny witheringly. Nanny brightened.
"'You saw it, too?'
Granny rolled her eyes. "'Come on,' she said, "'let's get to the road.'
Said Magrat. "'How?'
They looked at the nominal ground between their reasonably dry refuge and the road. It had a yellowish appearance. There were floating branches and tufts of suspiciously green grass. Nanny pulled a branch off the fallen tree she was sitting on and tossed it a few yards. It struck damply and sank with the noise of someone trying to get the last bit out of a milkshake.
"'We fly over to it, of course,' Nanny said.
"'You two can,' said Granny. "'There's nowhere for me to run and get mine started.' In the end, Magrat ferried her across on her broom, Nanny bringing up the rear with Granny's erratic stick in tow. "'I just hope no one saw us, that's all,' said Granny, when they'd reached the comparative safety of the road. Other roads joined the swamp causeway as they got nearer to the city. They were crowded, and there was a long line at the gate. From ground level, the city was even more impressive. Against the steam of the swamps it shone like a polished stone. Coloured flags flew over the walls.
"'Looks very jolly,' said Nanny.
"'Very clean,' said Magrat.
"'It just looks like that from the outside,' said Granny, who had seen a city before. "'When you get inside, it'll be all beggars and noise and gutters full of I don't know what. You mark my words.'
"'They're turning quite a lot of people away,' said Nanny.
"'They said on the boat that lots of people come here for fat lunchtime,' said Granny. "'Probably you get lots of people who ain't the right sort.'
Half a dozen guards watched them approach.
"'Very smartly turned out,' said Granny. "'That's what I like to see. "'Not like at home.'
There were only 6 suits of chain mail in the whole of Lancre, made on the basis of one size doesn't quite fit all. Bits of string and wire had to be employed to take in the slack, since in Lancre the role of palace guard was generally taken by any citizen who hadn't got much to do at the moment. These guards were all 6-footers, and even Granny had to admit quite impressive in their jolly red and blue uniforms. The only other real city guards she'd ever seen were those in Ankh-Morpork. The sight of Ankh-Morpork's city guard made thoughtful people wonder who could possibly attack that was worse. They certainly weren't anything to look at. To her amazement, 2 pikes barred her way as she stepped under the arched gateway.
"'We're not attacking, you know,' she said.
A corporal gave her a salute.
"'No, ma'am,' he said, "'but we have orders to stop borderline cases.'
"'Borderline?' said Nanny. "'What's borderline about us?' The corporal swallowed. Granny Weatherwax's gaze was a hard one to meet. "'Well,' he said, "'you're a bit, grubby.' There was a ringing silence. Granny took a deep breath. "'We had a bit of an accident in the swamp,' said Magrat quickly.
"'I'm sure it'll be all right,' said the corporal wretchedly. "'The captain'll be here directly. "'Only there's all kinds of trouble if we let in the wrong sort.' You'd be amazed at some of the people we get in here.
Can't go letting the wrong sort in, said Nanny Og. We wouldn't want you to go letting the wrong sort in.
I dare say we wouldn't want to come into the kind of city that had let the wrong sort in, would we, Esme?
Magrat kicked her on the ankle.
Good thing we're the right sort. What's happening, Corporal?
The captain of the guards strolled out of a door in the archway and walked over to the witches.
These ladies... "'Want to come in, sir,' said the corporal.
"'Well?'
"'They're a bit, you know, not 100% clean,' said the corporal, wilting under Granny's stare, "'and one of them's got messy hair.'
"'Well,' snapped Magrat. and one of them looks like she uses bad language.
What?
Said Nanny, her grin evaporating. I'll tan your eyes, you little bugger.
But, Corporal, they have got brooms, said the captain. It's very hard for cleaning staff to look so tidy all the time.
Cleaning staff? Said Granny.
I'm sure they're as anxious as you are to get tidied up, said the captain.
Excuse me,
said Granny, empowering the words with much the same undertones as are carried by words like charge and kill.
Excuse me, but does this pointy hat I'm wearing mean anything to you?
The soldiers looked at it politely.
Can you give me a clue?
Said the captain eventually.
It means...
We'll just trot along in if it's all the same to you, said Nanny Og. Got a lot of cleaning up to do. She flourished her broomstick. Come, ladies. She and Magrat grasped Granny's elbows firmly and propelled her under the archway before her fuse burned out. Granny Weatherwax always held that you ought to count up to 10 before losing your temper. No one knew why, because the only effect of this was to build up the pressure and make the ensuing explosion a whole lot worse. The witches didn't stop until they were out of sight of the gate. Now, Esme, said Annie soothingly, you shouldn't take it personal, and we are a bit mucky, you must admit. They were just doing their job, all right. How about that?
They treated us as if we were ordinary people, said Granny in a shocked voice.
This is foreign parts, Granny, said Magrat. Anyway, you said the men on the boat didn't recognize the hat either.
But then I didn't want them to, said Granny. That's different.
It's just an incident, Granny, said Magrat. They were just stupid soldiers. They don't even know a proper free-form hairstyle when they see it. Nanny looked around. Crowds milled past them almost in silence. And you must admit it's a nice, clean city, she said. They took stock of their surroundings. It was certainly the cleanest place they'd ever seen. Even the cobblestones had a polished look.
You could eat your tea off the street, said Nanny as they strolled along.
Yes, but you'd eat your tea off the street anyway, said Granny.
I wouldn't eat all of it.
Even the gutters are scrubbed. Not a Ronald in sight, Luke. Ronald the Third of Lancre, believed to be an extremely unpleasant monarch, was remembered by posterity only in this obscure bit of rhyming slang.
Giffer?
Well, you said that in Ankh-Morpork.
This is somewhere else.
It's so spotless, said Magrat. Makes you wish you'd cleaned your sandals.
Yeah, Danny Og squinted along the street. Makes you wish you were a better person, really.
Why are you two whispering?
She followed their gaze. There was a guard standing on the street corner. When he saw them looking at him, he touched his helmet and gave them a brief smile.
Even the guards are polite, said Magrat.
And there's so many of them, too, said Granny.
Amazing, really, needing all these guards in a city where people are so clean and quiet, said Magrat.
Perhaps there's so much niceness to be spread around, they need a lot of people to do it, said Nanny Og.
The witches wandered through the packed streets.
Nice houses, though, said Magrat, very decorative and oldie-worldie.
Granny Weatherwax, who lived in a cottage that was as oldie-worldie as it was possible to be without being a lump of metamorphic rock, made no comment. Nanny Og's feet started to complain.
We ought to find somewhere to stop the night, she said. We can look for this girl in the morning. We'll do a lot better for a good night's sleep.
And a bath, said Magrat, with soothing herbs.
Good idea. I could just go a bath too, said Nanny.
My word, doesn't autumn roll around quickly, said Granny sourly.
Yeah? When did you last have a bath, Esme?
What do you mean, last?
See? And there's no call to make comments about my ablutions.
Baths is unhygienic, Granny declared. You know I've never agreed with baths, sitting around in your own dirt like that.
What do you do then, said Magrat.
I just washes, said Granny, all the bits, you know, as and when they becomes available.
However available they were, and no further information was vouchsafed on this point, they were certainly more available than accommodation in Genua in fat lunchtime. All the taverns and inns were more than full. Gradually the press of crowds pushed them out of the main streets and into the less fashionable quarters of the city. But still there was no room for the three of them. Granny Weatherwax had had enough.
The very next place we see, she said, setting her jaw firmly, we're going in. What's that inn over there?
Nanny Og peered at the sign.
Hotel
No vacancies, she muttered, and then brightened up. Hotel no vacancies, she repeated. That means new, cancies in foreign, she added helpfully. It'll do, said Granny. She pushed the door open. A round, red-faced man looked up from the desk. He was new to the job and very nervous. The last incumbent had disappeared for not being round and red-faced enough. Granny didn't waste time. You see this hat? She demanded. You see this broom? The man looked from her to the broom and back again. Yes, he said. What's that mean? It means we want 3 rooms for the night, said Granny, looking smugly at the other two. With sausage, said Nanny. And 1 vegetarian meal, said Magrat. The man looked at all 3 of them. Then he went over to the door. You see this door? You see this sign? He said. We don't bother about signs, said Granny. Well then, said the man, I give up. What's the pointy hat and a broom really mean? It means I'm a witch, said Granny. The man put his head on one side. Yeah, he said. Is that another word for dark old woman? Dear Jason and everyone, wrote Nanny Ogg, you know, they don't know about witches here. That's how backward they are in foreign parts. A man gave Esme some cheek, and she would have lost her temper, so me and Magrat and I got hold of her and rushed her out, because if you make someone think they've been turned into something, there's always trouble. You remember what happened last time, when afterwards you had to go and dig a pond for Mr. Wilkins to live in? They had managed to find a table to themselves in a tavern. It was packed with people of all species. The noise was at shouting level and smoke wreathed the air. Will you stop that scribbling, Gipper Og? It gets on my nerves, snapped Granny. They must have witches here, said Magrat. Everywhere has witches. You've got to have witches abroad. You find witches everywhere. Like cockroaches, said Nanny Og cheerfully. You should have let me make him believe he was a frog, muttered Granny. You can't do that, Esme. You can't go around making people believe their things just because they've been cheeky and don't know who you are, said Gipper. Otherwise we'd be up to here and people up and about. Despite many threats, Granny Weatherwax had never turned anyone into a frog. The way she saw it, there was a technically less cruel but cheaper and much more satisfying thing you could do. You could leave them human and make them think they were a frog, which also provided much innocent entertainment for passers-by. I always felt sorry for Mr. Wilkins, said Magrat, staring moodily at the tabletop. It was so sad watching him try to catch flies on his tongue. He shouldn't have said what he said, said Granny. What, you were a domineering old busybody, said Nanny innocently. I don't mind criticism, said Granny. You know me. I've never been one to take offence at criticism. No one could say I'm the sort to take offence at criticism. Not twice, anyway, said Nanny. Not without blowing bubbles. It's just that I can't stand unfairness, said Granny. And you stop that grinning, anyway. I don't see why you're making a fuss about it. We've all off after a couple of days. Mrs. Wilkins says he still goes out swimming a lot, said Margaret. It's given him a whole new interest, she said. Perhaps they have a different kind of witch in the city, said Magrat, hopelessly. Perhaps they wear different sort of clothes. There's only one kind of witch, said Granny, and we're it. She looked around the room. Of course, she thought, if someone was keeping witches out, people wouldn't know about them. Someone who didn't want anyone else meddling here. But she let us in. Oh, well, at least we're in the dry, said Nanny. A drinker, standing in a crowd behind her, threw back his head to laugh and spilled beer down her back. She muttered something under her breath. Magrat saw the man look down to take another swig and stare wide-eyed into the mug. And then he dropped it and fought his way out of the room, clutching at his throat. What did you do to his drink? She said. You ain't old enough to be told, said Nanny. At home, if a witch wanted a table to herself, it just happened. The sight of the pointy hat was enough. People kept a polite distance, occasionally sending free drinks to her. Even Magrat got respect. Not particularly because anyone was in awe of her, but because a slight to one witch was a slight to all witches, and no one wanted Granny Weatherwax coming around to explain this to them. Here, they were being jostled, as if they were ordinary. Only Nanny Ogg's warning hand on Granny Weatherwax's arm was keeping a dozen jovial drinkers from unnatural amphibianhood. And even Nanny's usually very elastic temper was beginning to twang. She always prided herself on being as ordinary as muck, but there was ordinary, and there was ordinary. It was like being that prince, what's his name, in the nursery story, who likes to wander around his kingdom dressed up as a commoner. She'd always had a shrewd suspicion that the little pervert made sure people knew who he was beforehand, just in case anyone tried to get too common. It was like getting muddy. Getting muddy when you had a nice hot tub to look forward to was fun. Getting muddy when all you had to look forward to was more mud was no fun at all. She reached a conclusion. Hey, why don't we have a drink? Said Nanny Ogg brightly. We'd all feel better for a drink. Oh, no, said Granny. You caught me with that herbal drink last time. I'm sure there was alcohol in that. I definitely felt a bit woozy after the sixth glass. I ain't drinking any more foreign muck. You've got to drink something, said Magrat soothingly. I'm thirsty anyway. She looked vaguely at the crowded bar. Perhaps they do some kind of fruit cup or something. Bound to, said Nanny Ogg. She stood up, glanced at the bar, and surreptitiously removed the hat pin from her hat. Shall it be a moment? The two of them were left in their own private gloom. Granny sat staring fixedly in front of her. You really shouldn't take it so bad just because people aren't showing you any respect, said Magrat, pouring soothing oil on the internal fires. And they've hardly ever shown me any respect at all. It's not a problem. If you ain't got respect, you ain't got a thing, said Granny, distantly. Oh, I don't know. I've always managed to get along, said Magrat. That's because you're a wet hen, Magrat Garlic, said Granny. There was a short, hot silence, ringing with the words that shouldn't have escaped, and a few grunts of pained surprise from the direction of the bar. I know she's always thought that, Magrat told herself within the glowing walls of her embarrassment. I just never thought she'd ever say it. And she'll never say sorry because that's not the kind of thing she does. She just expects people to forget things like that. I was just trying to be friends again, if she ever really has any friends. Here we are, then, said Nanny Ogg, emerging from the crust with a tray. Fruit drinks. She sat down and looked from one to the other. Made from bananas, she said, in the hope of striking a spark of interest from either woman. I remember our Shane brought a banana home once. My, we had a good laugh about that. I said to the man, what kind of fruit drinks do people drink around here? And this is what he gave me, made from bananas. A banana drink. You like it? It's what everyone drinks here. It's got bananas in it. It's certainly very strongly flavoured, said Magrat, sipping hers cautiously. Has it got sugar in it, too? Very likely, said Nanny. She looked at Granny's middle-distance frown for a moment, and then picked up her pencil and licked the end professionally. Anyway, one good thing is the drink here is very cheap. There's this one called a banana-nana duckling, which is basically rum with a banana-nana-nana in it. Nanny Ogg knew how to start spelling banana, but didn't know how you stopped. I can feel it doing me good. It is very damp here. I hope we find somewhere to stay tonight. I expect we shall, because Esme always falls on her feet, or at any rate on someone's feet. I have drawn a picture of a banana-nana-nana duckling. You can see it is empty right down to the bottom. Love, Mum, XXXX. In the end, they found a stable. It was, as Nanny Ogg cheerfully commented, probably warmer and more hygienic than any of the inns, and there were millions of people in foreign parts who'd give their right arms for such a comfy, dry place to sleep. This cut about as much ice as a soap hacksaw. It didn't take much to make witches fall out. Magrat lay awake, using her sack of clothes as a pillow and listening to the warm, soft rain on the roof. It's all gone wrong before we've even started, she thought. I don't know why I let them come with me. I'm perfectly capable of doing something by myself for once, but they always treat me as if I was a wet hen.
I don't see why I should have to put up with her shouting and snapping at me the whole time. What's so special about her, anyway? She hardly ever does anything really magical, whatever Nanny says. She really does just shout a lot and bully people. And as for Nanny, she means well, but she has no sense of responsibility. I thought I'd die when she started singing the hedgehog song in the inn. I just hope to goodness the people didn't know what the words meant. I'm the fairy godmother around here. We're not at home now. There's got to be different ways of doing things in foreign parts. She got up at first light. The other two were asleep, although asleep was too moderate a word for the sounds Granny Weatherwax was making. Margaret put on her best dress, the green silk one that was unfortunately now a mass of creases. She took out a bundle of tissue paper and slowly unwrapped her occult jewellery. Margaret bought occult jewellery as a sort of distraction from being Margaret. She had three large boxes of the stuff and was still exactly the same person. She did her best to remove the straw from her hair, then she unpacked the magic wand. She wished she had a mirror to inspect herself in. I've got the wand, she said quietly. I don't see why I need any help. Desiderata said I was to tell them not to help.